5 a.m. I'd like to note the smile on Representative Choquette's face this morning. We do have a quorum, Representatives Moyer, Choquette, Baker, Miller, and Kabina.
That's because it's chair to the squeak anymore.
Did we oil it for you?
Yes, you did. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I quit.
We have before today House Bill 138 relating to appropriations of clean water fund waste management loans. House Bill 237 relating to state leasing of new buildings. House Bill 11 relating to longevity bonus nursing home. And we also will be hearing from carryover House Bill 138, any substitute. At this time, I'd like to take up House Bill 138. Representative Moore.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Boyer.
For the record, my name is Mark Boyer, District 20, Fairbanks. I think you have in your packet a proposed CS, it should be work draft 7LS0467D, 4891, that has effectively reduced the title to more appropriately reflect what it is we've left in the bill, or proposing to leave in the bill at this point, which is the old Section 4, which would appropriate $150,000 to DEC for solid waste characterization recycling market study for the fiscal year 1992. The question had been raised by Representative Baker last time we visited this issue, and the question or interest was that ALPAR may have already done this work in the past, and Jeff Mock from the department isn't yet here, but Mr. Mock did speak to, I think, the director of ALPAR and in some length, and the result was that ALPAR has in fact done something like this in a much narrower fashion, and the information is several years old, and that they've not actually done a full-blown or a comprehensive marketing, recycling marketing study. And it's my information, well, Mr. Mock can speak for himself and characterize the conversation, but my understanding that the thinking is that there is a need for this kind of characterization study and marketing study for recycled materials, and so we would prefer to pursue that and leave this in the bill and move it on to finance.
My intentions are to move the bill on to finance. Representative Baker, did your question get answered?
Oh, I spoke with the director too, and I think that's a correct question. That you're not convinced that ALPAR that this is necessary, but that's
questions from the committee? Entertain a motion. Representative Moore.
Okay, well,
Mr. Chairman, I would move that we send from committee CS for House Bill 138 individual recommendation of ask unanimous consent.
I think we need to have the CS reports for.
You're right. I move we adopt the CS.
Any Jackson's adopting the CS 138. CS before us. Representative Moore.
I move that we move CS 138 from committee with the recommendation to ask unanimous consent.
Without objection, CS 138 is moved.
Well,
all four of you, if you ever see this bill again, make sure you add something here to come to us.
Remember that number.
I'd like to take up House Bill 11 at this time. House Bill 11. We do have, should have a CS on your desk for House Bill 11. We have that this bill before us previously.
Okay.
Representative Boyd.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As you recall, we had a very long working session hearing on April Fool's Day. And the room here was packed, and it sounded like we had a whole group of people in Anchorage, members and others who testified on a whole range of bills affecting the longevity bonus program. HB 11 was just a piece of that, and at that time we heard from the Department of Health and Social Services and also the Division of Pioneers Benefits in the Division of Administration concerning and their support, expressing their support for the proposed CS for House Bill 11, which is a much narrower approach to amending the current law to provide that if a person spends less than 50 or 90 consecutive days in a nursing home, and if that person otherwise qualified for the longevity bonus prior to October of 1985, that person would continue to be eligible for the longevity bonus, notwithstanding their placement in a nursing home. I think the information that we saw reflected that at any given time there would be no more than perhaps between 5 and 9. I tried to think of them as slots rather than individuals, because there are clearly more individuals who will be touched by this than 5 to 9 people, but the overall cost impact would only be in the neighborhood of 5 to 9 year-round, like kind of FTEs if you think about full-time equivalent slots in. That's because someone may come in and only spend a day in a nursing home and be otherwise disqualified, except for the provisions of this new CS, and then rotate, you know, out of the home or out of the nursing wing and back into the residential wing or back into their homes, that type of thing. So it has a small, narrow impact, but it could reach out and touch hundreds of people over the course of any given year who might be disqualified otherwise from receiving their benefit for at least a month. And it's fairly surgical, and I think it's a good thing to do. And in as much as we've narrowed it, I think it's a much better bill. So I would urge that the committee adopt the CS and move along.
Now, we have two fiscal notes with this bill now. One from Health and Social Services is a zero.
Mr. Chairman, I think actually that reflects a negative impact on the Medicaid budget as well.
Thank you. I see we have the director of Pioneer Benefits here. I'd like to ask a couple questions about that fiscal note.
Okay, we'll have her up here in a minute. Jim. Barbara, would you state your name for the record, please?
Barbara Bassel, I'm the director of Pioneer Benefits.
Could you explain the fiscal note from the Division of Pioneer Benefits?
I have a copy here. That number was derived by research in the admissions within the private sector and the Pioneer Homes. And then calculating from that how many people would be at any given time eligible for this under this new bill. And we came up with, out of a total of 452 admissions in the private sector and our additional admissions in the Pioneer Zone, we came up that approximately 60 residents per month in the state would be eligible. And that's a total variation. Every month can be different residents. Like Representative Boyer said, some of them only are admitted for 3-4 days and still lose a longevity bonus. They may lose it because of one single day. So the first year I calculated it that July, August, September, they slowly will be increasing in number. And then from September on, that I calculated to be a steady 60 residents per month who would be eligible under this new bill. From then on, every year it will slowly decline since the population is limited. There's no additional population coming into this group of recipients, and these are all pre-1984. These are all older pioneers. So estimated 60 residents in the first year at 250 months.
That number is a little bit higher than the number Representative Boyer used.
Mr. Chairman, again, I was trying to characterize that the yearly impact is of five, you know, people receiving, 5 to 10 people receiving full payments throughout the year as if there were no interruption. But the interruption may be caused by one day or a week, or what we propose here is something less than 90 days. So it actually may reach out and touch 600 to 700 individual recipients over the course of a given year, although the full impact is only of 5 to 10 slots.
For the total 3,000.
Right, 250 times 12 times, you know, that's it.
And does the department support this bill as amended here?
Yes.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Barbara, how do you go from 165,000 in 92, you go up to 180,000 in 93, and then you start dropping back down?
The first year, I would only pay in July for 20 people, because the bill is in effect July, so in the first month I will have very few people be eligible. But in August, some of the people who may have been eligible in July are still in the nursing home. So these are in addition to the ones which came in July, then I added August to it. And by September, the total 90 days for anybody who could have been there 90 days has reached the peak. So the first year is a little bit lower than the second year. And then after that, I looked at the Alaska Department of Labor statistics on mortality. And from then on, so that type of population is slowly going to decrease. So I decreased it from 92 at 60 residents, 93 still 60 residents for the full year, and 94, 95 at 59, and 96, 97 at 58 residents. So that's partially an educated guess with statistics. It's very difficult to predict mortality at that rate. And since it's such a small amount compared to our total recipients of 22,000.
Thank you.
Further questions from the committee? Is there anyone else in the audience that has any comments on the bill? Wishes to testify? Wishes of the committee? Representative Choquette?
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to move CS for House Bill 11 out of committee with individual recommendations.
Any objections?
Mr. Chairman, is the CS been adopted?
Same thing, you're right. We had this before us on the April 1st meeting, but it was not adopted. So there is a motion then to adopt the CS. Any objection to adopting the CS? Hearing no objection, there is a motion then to move the CS for House Bill 111. With individual recommendations, are there objections?
Mr. Chairman, I would only like to make sure that we reflect three fiscal notes, one from Pioneer Benefits, one from longevity bonus hold harmless within Health and Social Service, and then also a fiscal note for the Medicaid facilities budget.
We don't have that.
Well, Mr. Chairman, we can reflect that in finance. I have what is a draft, and I don't see anyone from the department, but it reflects a $5,000 reduction in the Medicaid facilities budget. It's roughly split 50-50 between the state and federal government as a result of the bill. So just for the record, I'll enter that and I can make this available if you'd like to adopt it. Negative fiscal note. We'll see that for
nobody signed it.
A negative fiscal note. Never seen one of those, Mr. Chairman.
Oh, I've seen them.
Well, we can include that in the record.
If this is all we want is negative fiscal notes, we could be adopting the governor's proposal on longevity bonus. Negative fiscal notes.
Negative.
How did this work? Did you do you actually do this yourself and then take it to them?
No, Mr. Chairman.
Oh, they just sent it over as a draft?
Yes.
Well, since there's some lawyers on Finance Committee, I'm sure they'll make sure they get set. It's obviously advantageous. The minister will request that it should be a third fiscal note, though. Any objection to moving the bill? There's no objection. CS for House Bill 11 is moved. Thank you, Representative Boyer. Well, let's do. Next. 237. then before us is House Bill 237 by the House Transportation Committee, an act establishing certain criteria that must be considered when state agency leases involve the construction of new buildings. This bill is based on recommendations made by the State Lease Task Force, which was created in the 16th legislature by HCR 52. Sharon Macklin, would you please come before us? Sharon Macklin represents the Alaska Design Council. I should note for the record that I was a member of that committee and never did get to Juneau during the interim to participate, but did see the reports and concurred with the final report of that committee. Ms. Macklin?
Thank you, Chairman Covina. For the record, my name is Sharon Macklin. I represent the Alaska Professional Design Council. And this is a piece of legislation that we initiated after the results of the interim task force on the design lease program. Today I have Paul Volkers, one of the members of the APDC, who is also an architect and resides in Juneau, here to testify on this bill as to why we feel it's a valuable piece of legislation. And if you'll excuse me, I'll go ahead and ask Mr. Volkers to come to the table.
You're fine.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. I'm Paul Volkers. I'm on the State Board of the American Institute of Architects and also a member of the APDC, Alaska Professional Design Council. And I was on the task force that looked at this issue and came up with some recommendations earlier this year, actually along with Keith Kirk and a couple of Bob Link, I think, was on the same task force. We've been in favor of some kind of improvement to the state's leasing procedures for a couple of years now. And I think I live in Juneau, and Juneau's been has seen real obvious results of the way that the lease procedures have been conducted previously. And those leases are simply awarded on the basis of the lowest cost. There is no way for the state to come in and evaluate whether it's a good building or meets their needs or has good materials or works in terms of a planning context. They simply have to award based on whoever can come up with the cheapest building. And what we're suggesting is that the state still pursue a lease procedure, simply amend that to look at more issues. You know, look at the quality of design, look if it fits into a planning context in the community, look at life cycle costs, quality of materials, right down the line, and make sure that the state's getting a decent investment for the money. You know, because in many cases on these larger buildings, the state is not simply leasing, they're in fact having themselves a building built that's going to be here 20 or 30 years in the community, and they'll have significant long-term impacts. So we're very supportive of any move to try and make that process a little more intelligent. I have a couple questions on the language itself, and skipping right to Section D on the second page. On line 6, right, the current language says the department shall consider, in addition to lease costs, the life cycle cost, function, et cetera. And I would raise the question that consider is a fairly vague word and doesn't necessarily indicate any kind of process. The State Lease Task Force went a little further than this to recommend some methods for which an evaluation can take place of buildings. And I think that recommendation was with the initial RFP for space, that points be assigned or somehow a value system be put in place so that the people proposing on projects could look and say that, okay, cost will be 20 or 30%, for instance, of this package, design will be 10%, planning will be 10%. And there was some kind of objective criteria set out initially so that the proposers could then react to that. And so that would be one comment I've got, that right now that whole process is left undefined. And the one other issue is currently Department of Administration conducts all the leasing, and at present they do not have on staff anybody who they feel is in a position or qualified to make determinations on quality, some of these other qualitative aspects. And so there was some discussion about maybe contracting out that evaluation to qualified professionals if they didn't exist within the department. points I had. I'd entertain any questions if you have.
Why does the legislature establish separate procedures from the court systems?
I'm not in a position to answer that.
Mr. Chairman, it's the other way around. The court system establishes separate procedures from the legislature. And I would like at this time, I see Mr. Link is in the audience, and he could, yeah, I found him to be very good at these type of questions.
We'll bring up the department just a minute. Any questions? Any questions from the committee? All right, thank you.
Thank you.
We might stick around, though, for this in case we have it. Mr. Gergen, would you like to comment on this bill?
Chairman Keith Gergen, Director of Operations for Department of Transportation and Public Facilities. I was also DOT's member on the task force that was created by the legislature last year. The bill does not, as written, affect DOT. Most of my comments really are as a member of that task force. I think basically the intention of that section is to deal with the reality that whether you're buying a toaster or whether you're buying a building, the first cost is not always the best indicator of what you're getting. The feeling is that, and I think it talks about when a lease will cause the construction of a new building, which implies essentially the state's going out for a fairly large lease. It implies that the state would be looking at a long-term need of space. And clearly the state, even revenues and staff sizes may go up or down in the coming years. There is a base amount of space the state needs. You're only going to own that space for 20 or 30 years. You need to decide the best method of ownership and leasing and the value of the facility that you're going to move into in order to really make those costs the least possible. So I would support the intent of the bill.
Sort of like buying graders, isn't it? The cheapest one isn't always the best one for you to buy, which creates a problem with our procurement code.
There is a bill that's been introduced to deal specifically with heavy equipment purchase, and the analogy is not a bad one. We have found that we have a higher operating cost for certain large equipment that is bought basically on a low bid basis. You can deal with some of that in specifications, but you do need to take a look at life cycle costs, other costs of ownership and repair and maintenance.
Okay, why is this bill only dealing with the legislature and court system and not the administration?
I believe the last part does deal with the Department of Administration's leasing authority.
Which is, it doesn't say it, but that's what that section of the law is under.
Mr. Link could probably respond to that, but I believe that's the Department of Administration's procurement code authority for leasing.
Does this bill do exactly what the task force recommended?
Mr. Chairman, I think the task force probably said a little bit more. They tried to construct an argument as to when the state should own something as opposed to when they should lease it. There are circumstances where there'll be a gray area, and for the same X number of square foot of lease, depending upon the kind of proposals you get, the kind of climate that there is in the economy, the cost of financing, a number of things, at one point in time it may be better to lease than to build, and another may be better to build than to lease. They tried to structure a process where there'd be a deliberative approach to deciding which of those is best in a given circumstance. Now, that is where it would affect DOT. If the decision by the state was made that it was better to build, and that would be a DOT responsibility. I think the task force had some discussion and acknowledged the fact that within the way state government is set up, except for the governor, there's really no one who is tasked in looking at that kind of question. If someone decides to appropriate money to build something, it goes to DOT. If someone appropriates the cost of a lease, it goes to DOA. And where that decision gets made is not appropriate.
Jim Baker.
So, Jim, maybe, I have a little help here for just a second. The way that I read this is that this legislation will relate only to leases. Is that correct? So, could you explain for me, if we're going to establish criteria for properties that we would lease, why should we not have the same criteria for properties and buildings that we own?
Mr. Chairman, that is a fair question, and I can't speak for exactly what Bill written this way. I think the reason is because there has been a greater move for the state to lease space, and that some of the spaces that they lease have caused concerns about whether or not in the long term they're really the best way of growing space in the state. And I don't know that the same, I mean, the state hasn't been building buildings for its own use for some time. I think it's more a matter of just what people are concentrating on as being the problem. There are standards which DOT has adopted for new construction. I don't know that they're necessarily the best ones or the most current ones. It has not been an issue which, in my tenure in the department, has been a great concern because the state simply hasn't been doing office space for many years.
I guess that would just be kind of my concern. If we're going to put something on the books, then it should probably be consistent with all state buildings, not just because we may, well, from a cost-effective standpoint, find that it's more efficient today to own than it is to lease. And you have a standard for lease buildings, but you don't have the same standard for ownership buildings. I think it's inconsistent, especially if we're going to put it in the law.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Keith, are you aware of any, there's a new building being built right now, I assume for lease, the TEC building down by the DNR building. Are you aware of any concerns with that building that, if this law were in effect, would have been covered?
I think probably Bob Link could better respond to that. I've not been involved in that particular project, except what I read in the newspaper, which, of course, is only part of the story. I'd say, given some of the discussion at the task force, I think the intention was that it would have made a difference, perhaps, in the kind of building it was constructed.
Is there anybody else to speak on this subject?
I'd like to hear from Mr. Lake.
Yeah. One of the problems I have you signed up? Mary, are there other people that have signed up? Hard for me to know who's going to speak if you hold on the sign register. Killing?
For the record, my name is Bob Link. I'm the Director of Division of General Services in the Department of Administration. We do the state's leasing right now.
Mr. Link, what was your comment on the change in line 6, the word consider?
I think it's plenty because before we had nothing. The recommendation from the State Lease Task Force, which is contained, I think, in your package of information, said address. And I think address and consider are probably about the same word. We support the concept of trying to seek a better overall building in our leasing process, and this sort of heads us in that direction. In the past, as a comment on our program, we've done what the administration and the legislature in the form of budgets told us to do, but look at the short-term costs and get us the cheapest space possible, and we've done that. If we're going to look at longer terms or broader considerations, we can do that too, but the past, the direction has always been get us the cheapest space we can over the short term. So we don't have a problem changing that direction and saying consider a bigger picture when
I continue, would you have a problem if the same thing applied to new construction or state-owned buildings?
Mr. Chairman, we don't get into new construction. So I can't speak for DOT. We won't involve ourselves in new construction. That's all DOT.
New construction of a building then applies strictly to a lease?
Mr. Chairman, this bill says that when we have a lease which causes new construction, that will apply standards beyond just cost or considerations other than just cost. If the state were to build a building, then with state money, you know, for example, a capital allocation of some place to build a building, that would be a DOT project. As long as we're doing what we're doing now, that would be our project. That is where the state gives us money and says, go out and continue to lease space for an agency. We issue a bid for a lease, and the result of that some developer builds a building to meet our requirements, then we're doing it. Recognize the separation.
Yeah, I do, unfortunately. Mr. Link, if I might, one more question here. The comments that Keith made in reference to, you were also on the task force that pretty much created this recommendation, that it doesn't go quite as far as the task force went in terms of inclusion. What did you say, Keith? Inclusion of?
Sure, I think they were trying to talk about when to build, when to lease, and looking at that whole question as opposed to just what to do with the lease.
Did you run into any, or do you have any feelings on whether or not that concept should be put into this bill? Was there any conclusion?
First of all, it isn't my bill, so I
no, I just wanted your opinion on it.
Mr. Chairman, I voted for the recommendation of task force. Right now, the problem develops as an agency grows or evolves. There is no transition point where somebody says we should stop leasing and start building. We continue on leasing for an agency. An agency starts out small. They grow over a period of time. They consolidate. They need a bigger building. Eventually, we cause buildings to be built. What the task force says is that there's a point in time when we should stop thinking only in terms of leasing and move on to say, admit that an agency is going to be in a location for a while and they're going to be there virtually permanently as far as the state's concerned, and that therefore the state ought to build the building instead of continually leasing. I agree with that. I voted for that in the recommendation of the state task force.
Which obviously this does not address at all.
Right.
I believe that. Representative Baker.
Mr. Chairman, that was my point originally, and that's where I think it's inconsistent. I support exactly what's trying to be accomplished here, but I think that we're sending a conflicting message if it only applies to leased facilities when we should apply the same standards to ownership.
State-owned.
And you know, at the spam camp, for example, where the lease is $225 a square foot or $3 or whatever it is, well, you know, you really need to look at some of the fiscal notes on a long-term basis, and we need to have system standards, and whether it be in leased or in ownership facilities, I believe.
I do agree, Mr. Chairman.
So what you're saying is that we can build a building cheaper than $3 a square foot.
Well, and maybe and still incorporate the standards that we would do on a lease basis.
Are you suggesting that this bill should be amended to have that evaluation as part of their criteria?
I think it would be consistent. If we're going to put it on the books, I think it should be consistent whether we own or release. If not, we shouldn't have dual standards.
Strange. Comment?
That's always been the purview of DOT, the construction. I mean, personally, I think that it ought to apply. But that's, like I said, it's always been there.
Do we lease because, when you're doing a lease, obviously you don't have to come to the legislature and get an appropriation. And is that the whole ball game there, that it's just so much easier to come and say, you got in your budget so much money for a lease, that if you got to come, it's like building, I think we tried to build a state capitol courthouse in Anchorage, didn't we? And that's been a real controversial issue of where we're going to get the money or the state. Maybe Chris will talk about that when it comes up, but it just seems to me that may be part of the issue of why we're just leasing and we're not building.
I think part of the issue is, one is it's a large pool of money which covers all the leases in the state, and it's easy to do what we've been doing. If you take out a hunk of money and put it aside and make it a capital project, it receives a different level of review than just a pool of money in the operating budget. I think that's adds to the difficulty of funding a building, no matter where the building's located.
Representative Moyer?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, like, how do you decide or when do you decide if it's wise for the state to enter into a lease with option to purchase arrangement as opposed to a straight out lease?
Do we have any of those?
I think we have two or three leases with options to purchase.
It seems like you would, you think, know you're going to own the building at some point, you may act differently towards the person who leases it to you in terms of more vigilant upkeep or whatever if you think you're going to own it someday.
Well, that's, you know, gets into a second question, which we haven't gotten really into, because there seems to be a resistance to starting off on financing buildings without having that reviewed in a different way. If we were buying a building, financing it with our lease payments, then we definitely want to look at it a different way. We're going to own it to the end rather than just we're going to be an occupant for a period of time. I mean, our buildings, all of our 300 and some odd leases of space are looked at as if we're going to be an occupant for a time and then leave. And that's why we don't concern ourselves something with the long-term condition of the building. We look at it, we're buying air, if you will. We should look at it in a different way if we're going to become the owner in a long period of time, or if we're the direct payment for the variable cost, such as upkeep and that sort of thing.
Mr. Chairman, I think it's important to keep in the contents of the purpose of this bill. There's no less than a dozen questions I could ask on this subject as far as state ownership and procurement and some of the other things involved. But as I read Mr. Link and Mr. Gerken's testimony, there would probably not be any resistance to an amendment to in accordance with what Representative Baker said, which I concur with, and involving a lease to purchase or ownership buildings. And maybe that could happen in a reasonably short time.
Correct me if I'm wrong, Representative Baker, but what you're suggesting is that a statement be added here that says, in consideration, I mean, basically that you should take into consideration the long-term cost of a lease compared to constructing and owning ourselves also.
Well, I think, Mr. Chairman, it could even be more simplistic than that. It may well just be able to read when the department is evaluating proposals for a lease. But you don't be evaluating the leases, do you? I was thinking that we could just add or purchase, but they technically do not do that. Perhaps another subsection that could speak to the fact that when any department of government considers a lease or purchase of a building, that these standards be applied, so that we just consistently apply the same standards.
But you're not telling them that before they decide to have a building built to lease, that they also consider the cost of what that would be to actually do it themselves rather than lease.
I would like that, Mr. Chair, yes. I'm not certain that we can find unanimity to accomplish that, but at the minimum level, whether we own or whether we lease, I'd like it to be a consistent standard, because if we do negotiate an option to purchase in that, then ultimately we will end up owning it. And if the two are inconsistent, then I think that we're not necessarily writing good legislation.
Well, I would ask you, why do you think you went and find unanimity into that? I mean, what's wrong with before they determine to have somebody else go build a building and lease it, that they analyze whether they could do it themselves much cheaper over the long haul?
Well, I agree, Mr. Chairman. I think they should, but you have two different departments working, and I'm not, I agree with you. If you could get both departments to agree, I think it'd be a wonderful amendment.
Mr. Chairman?
Mr. Lake?
We could probably, that's an area, we have a separation of who would handle which type of project, but we don't have any trouble agreeing to do an evaluation of whether a building should be built as opposed to rented over the long term. You know, we support an amendment along that line.
Mr. Chairman, is this the proper place for the proper building, that amendment?
I'm not a bill drafter, but Mr. Chairman, it seems to me that the title addresses the topic pretty well. I mean, it wouldn't involve a change of title or anything. It seems to me that it's covered under the subject.
I would think so, too. Okay, any other questions, Mr. Link?
One more question, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Chuck.
As a general rule, Mr. Link, does not, is it not your philosophy that state should not be in ownership of buildings unless it seems to be the only way to go?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Chuck, no. I think that there should be an evolution. A lease should be one of these flexible type of acquisitions, which meets space until you figured out where you're going, and then once we figured out where we're going, if we're going to have a long-term presence, then the state ought to be in the state building. In the long term, I don't want to quote DOT, but my guess is if you ask them in the long term, every time the state has built a building, that it is eventually proved to be a good investment over the long term.
That's the case.
Yeah,
that's my guess. Notwithstanding the capital move or something along those lines. So.
Well, like I said, long term makes different definitions to different people, but I think that you have to recognize that the state's going to have presence in locations in the state, wherever, no matter what size the state government is in the future.
Gotcha. No further questions, Mr. Vice Chairman.
Any further questions?
Actually, you just asked mine.
All right, thank you, Mr. Christensen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Chris Christensen. I'm a staff counsel to the Alaska Court System. I'm afraid I don't have any great insights to share with the committee today. The court system only became aware of this legislation a few days ago, and our fiscal officer and facilities manager Anchorage are still analyzing it and attempting to determine what the long-term impact on the system will be. If the committee does not have a test of the law today, I would hope to have a firm position by next week. I just would like to note for the record that the procurement code does exempt both the legislature and the court system from its provisions for good reason. That is that the legislature and the court system are very, very different institutionally than the executive branch. They have very different needs. Both bodies are only required to are required to adopt procurement guidelines that are consistent with competitive principles. I believe the only specific part of the procurement code that does apply to the court system and the legislature is the provision that any recent purchase that enters into in an amount in excess of $1 million a year must be approved by the legislature. Without having formulated an opinion yet, of course, the court system is not enthusiastic about the idea of placing additional limitations on its procurement abilities in the law. We prefer, of course, to retain the discretion to adopt procedures that are that fit our unique needs.
Representative Breckman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would ask the Mr. Christensen, what would your unique needs be? And I would think the criteria on page 2, section 3, section D, would cover that. Because it says functioning and your environment, et cetera, I would assume that that would be applicable to the court system.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Bruckman, again, as I indicated, we're still in the process of analyzing it, and I would hope that you would have
had, and just every type of procurement activity I've gotten into, the court system's exempt. And it's going to be a product of something that I'm going to be working on in the next couple of years, because they come to us for money, we give them money. They're part of the state structure. The court system, the railroad, and the university are exempt. A good portion of the procurement code. And I'd like to go on record stating that while I respect Chris's testimony on this bill, I'm going to be consistently asking more than asking for more documentation than what I've heard in terms of exemptions to procurement practices, leasing practices, etc.
Mr. Chairman, the court system, pursuant to the instructions in the procurement code, has adopted some procurement guidelines. And I'd be happy to provide the committee representative.
I have those guidelines, okay. Mr. Chairman.
And they are in full conformance with the competitive practices required of the executive branch.
I apologize. It's not my intention to get into an argument right here in that, but it is very consistent with a number of other activities we're working on that do fall in line with this this particular bill.
Other questions of the committee? Thank you, Mr. Chris. Is there anyone else that had, in lieu of the discussion, would like to add anything that's been discussed? Or I think I'd like to keep this bill a day or two and talk to a few people. Talk to some of you and intend to bring it back up very quickly. Would there be any objection from the committee to do that?
No objections.
Okay. House Bill 237. Done 138?
Yeah.
We can move that out already. I'd like all of you to be aware of a letter I sent to Lieutenant Governor. It should be on your desk. And it's in relationship to the discussions we had with the Division of Elections people a couple of days ago. And I have invited the Lieutenant Governor to come. I wasn't sure if that was appropriate, so I went up and asked the speaker if that was something that we would be, you know, not proper etiquette to do, and he said, no, just go ahead and do it, that's fine. He said he came down and testified on a bill already once. So maybe, and I think it's, I hope this isn't a partisan thing, you know, because we're talking about one party that said an election, but I think it affects us all, and so I think it'd be nice, a good idea if we could get some insight into it. We do have that department under purview, so.
Yes, we do.
So that should be, hopefully that might be a good discussion on Monday. We'll see how that goes.
I can promise you, Mr. Chairman, this will be a good discussion on Monday. I just reiterate that we need to keep in contents the basis of the bill. But I agree, I'm looking forward to Monday.
Well, over more, I think what we'll do is we'll get a little, this will be an overview of the department, and then specifically because we may, as a committee, want to consider any type of legislation or changing the statute that are on the books right now and dealing with elections and how they run. And that's, again, that's something that I definitely don't want to come out as a partisan thing. It's only, and in fact, I would only do it if there's some kind of bipartisan way that would look like we could, something need to be changed. So I don't understand how it's going to work. I just have questions that, my main question is, can somebody vote more than once? I have a problem. And,
it will become a partisan issue, Mr. Chairman.
Do you think so?
Oh, I guarantee it.
My understanding is, there may be lawsuits on the way on that issue from within the Republican Party itself, not from...
That's what I was saying the other day. I think this issue is best left in the courts.
Well, I wouldn't agree with that. If we have a way to legislate to, you know, to amend the statutes that would make sure
is interesting. We did get indications that we may have four separate elections in the primary from the division elections. If you can imagine that.
But none of that has to do with HB 167.
No, but it, in our committee's role responsibility has to do with oversight of the division of elections and how they're run. We are the committee of oversight for that department.
It's going to be a great meeting.
Just like having the commissioner of public safety here. You know, we weren't talking about a bill, but we're talking about what the heck he does. Which brings up another point. We do have our confirmation hearings coming up a week from Monday and 2 weeks from Monday.
We got Burton.
First we have Keller.
Are we close to being adjourned, Mr. Chairman?
Anybody got anything else?
Except that Max has got your letter ready on HB, or HJR 12 on the Susitna rec plan, and he didn't show up with it today, but I'll get it to you. I gave it to him yesterday morning. And I'll get it. Has that been done, Mike? You know,
I'm sorry, I wasn't listening.
The letter on the, I gave to Max and the disc? On HJR?
Yeah, Jim called on that late last night. I haven't had a chance to look yet.
All right, the next meeting, House State Affairs Committee, will be Friday, April 12th. That time we'll be hearing HB 91, jurisdiction of court, HB 34 relating to assignment of permanent fund defense, SCR 20 relating to Kodiak Island Bicentennial, and hopefully HCR 12. Relating to the Susitna Basin Management Plan.
Off the record.
Off the record.
I'll tell you something. These the courts
turned at 9 o'clock.
It was a draft.